Chapter 4 Two Tommies escorted Kurt down a flight of stairs to a basement corridor and into an interrogation room. There they strip-searched him. Kurt found the procedure humiliating, dehumanizing, although a small part of his mind found it comical. When the search was complete, his clothes were returned. The room was drab, grey, lacking windows, poorly lit and equipped with two canteen chairs on either side of a plain wooden table. Within 30 minutes the door opened and Kurt was joined by a rotund man in his early 60s wearing a shabby military uniform. The officer sat down facing Kurt.
"Welcome to England," he said, in perfect German.
"Thank you," Kurt replied.
"You may call me Colonel Scott," said the officer, continuing in German. "What is your full name and rank?"
"Kevin O'Reilly, Oberleutnant."
The colonel pursed his lips. "Your real name, if you don't mind."
"Please understand, Colonel, I need to protect my real identity. I am a wanted man in Germany with a price on my head."
"You're going to have to trust me," said the colonel. "I promise your name will not pass beyond these four walls."
Kurt took a deep breath and said, "Kurt Müller, Oberleutnant."
"A deserter from the Abwehr, I'm given to understand."
The word shocked Kurt momentarily. He had not considered it before, but that's exactly what he was, a deserter. The word carried unpleasant connotations. Deserters were the lowest form of life in the eyes of the Wehrmacht. They could be shot on sight.
"I'd like you to tell me your story," said Colonel Scott, switching to English. "From the beginning, if you would. Leave nothing out."
Kurt noticed a trace of a Scottish accent. He took a deep breath and began. "I was born in Ulm. My father worked in local government. My mother..." The colonel held up a hand and smiled like a dried prune.
"I don't think I need your full life story, Müller. Please start from when you joined the Abwehr."
Kurt told how, operating from Abwehr headquarters in Berlin, he had been in charge of running German agents in Ireland, and how he uncovered and joined the German resistance. He made no mention of his nefarious uncle, the late Reinhard Heydrich.
"You are now a committed anti-Nazi, is that your position?"
Colonel Scott was wearing round spectacles that gave him the innocent look of a child, but behind the lenses lurked a pair of eyes that betrayed a mind as sharp as a diamond.
"It is. I wish to return to Germany to do whatever I can to hasten the end of the Third Reich."
Colonel Scott cross-examined him about the Nazis, their leadership, their creed and policies, and the progress of the war, clearly fishing for the truth. Did Kurt harbour any affection for the party, or any lingering hopes of a German victory? Finally, he said,
"And you have come to us for what purpose?"
"I thought I could become an agent for British intelligence."
"And do what, exactly?"
Kurt stood for a moment to stretch his legs. He lifted a shoulder.
"Whatever you wish."
"Right. And how can we be sure that you are who you say you are? You could be sent here by Admiral Canaris to infiltrate and undermine our intelligence operations."
"I assure you that is not the case," said Kurt.
"Why should I believe you?"
"I have brought something that may help, a token of my good faith," said Kurt.
"I can give you a list of call signs used by German agents."
"These are agents operating in England."
"Many of them would be. The call signs I have are allocated to agents as they are deployed all over the world. The list includes call signs in operation now and some that will be used in the future."
"And how will these be of value to us?"
"I was a signalman with the Abwehr. Believe me, Colonel, they will be of value to your code-breaking teams."
Colonel Scott adjusted his glasses. "Where are these call signs? We found nothing like that among your belongings."
Kurt tapped the side of his head. "I'm a mathematician, Colonel. I have them committed to memory." The colonel left the room and returned with a single sheet of paper and a pencil, and Kurt wrote out the call signs that he had liberated from the Abwehr, adding two columns of variations. When he had completed the list, he handed it to the colonel. "These are the call signs of 30 agents, 10 to 12 in use, the rest waiting to be allocated to future German agents overseas.
As you can see, each has two variations that will be rotated in random order. The colonel folded the paper carefully and left the room with it. A Tommy entered, set up his camera, and took two head-and-shoulder photographs of Kurt, full face and profile, with Kurt holding a piece of cardboard with a number stenciled on it. When the photographer had finished, a different soldier entered and took down Kurt's details, height, eye color, distinguishing features, scars, tattoos, etc. He also took a full set of Kurt's fingerprints. Kurt felt like a criminal. All that was missing was a charge sheet and a pair of handcuffs.
The colonel returned carrying a folder. "It will take a while to verify those call signs," he said. "Is there anything else you can tell me in support of your story?"
Kurt said, "You know that Reinhard Heydrich was ambushed and attacked in Prague on the 27th of May last year. He died on June the 4th. Scott nodded. "I played a small hand in that." Kurt explained how he had advanced knowledge of the assassination attempt, but had done nothing to prevent it.
"That was helpful," said the colonel, pursing his lips. "But the reprisals were horrific."
Kurt had read about the Nazi reprisals. The Czech village of Lidice had been obliterated, and every male over 16 years of age massacred. The women and children were taken to labor camps. The village was leveled, leaving nothing but rubble.
Kurt said, "I read about that in the newspapers. Do you know how many were killed? The reports I read gave no numbers."
"No one knows for certain, but we estimate over 500 people must have died as a direct result of Heydrich's death. The news was broadcast from Berlin. They made no secret of it."
Once again, guilt and shame weighed heavily on Kurt as they had when he first read the story. He shared the guilt of all Germans for the horrific actions of their government, but he also had to bear his own special guilt, for if he had intervened and saved his uncle from the assassins, the Czech village would still be there, its inhabitants still alive.
"Is there anything else you can offer as proof of your bona fides?" said the colonel. Kurt could think of nothing.
The colonel said, "Can you give me the names of any agents operating in England?" "I'm sorry, Colonel, I don't have any."
"Not even one?"
"No, all I have is the call signs."
"You ran the agents in Ireland. Give me their names."
"There was only one at the end," Kurt said. "His cover name was John Dolan, his call sign was Stallion, and he lived in Cork. His reports were mostly low-level stuff about steel production in the Cork steelworks."
"Only one agent? You expect me to believe that?"
"I went over to investigate the disappearance of another agent and to meet with Professor Hirsch."
Colonel Scott said, "What can you tell me about the Black Orchestra?"
Kurt's blood turned to ice. "What is that?" he said. "Some sort of American jazz band?" The colonel blinked.
"It's a secret underground movement that opposes Hitler and his Reich, with members in high positions within the Abwehr. You must know about it."
The colonel was well informed, but whatever Kurt said next, he needed to be as vague as possible, so as not to put anyone in danger. He said, "Never heard of it. But I have seen a signal altered in the Abwehr before it was passed on to the Wehrmacht High Command."
"Just one? What was it about?"
"It contained the monthly production figures for RAF aircraft. The figure was exaggerated."
"What else did you notice?" said the colonel.
Kurt answered hesitantly. "Well, it seemed to me that the training of agents for overseas operations was inept, and I saw a couple of German agents operating in England withdrawn or silenced for no obvious reasons."
"You can name these agents?"
"No, I don't have their names."
"Was there anything else?"
Kurt shook his head.
"Tell me what happened in Ireland. Leave nothing out."
Kurt took a deep breath and gave the colonel an abridged version of his trip to Ireland, his meeting with Professor Hirsch, and how he killed two Gestapo officers before returning to Berlin. He mentioned no names apart from the professors. When Kurt had finished his story, the colonel made no comment. He pulled two photographs from his folder and placed them on the table. These were pictures Kurt had carried with him from home.
Tell me who these people are.
That's my mother, Mary O'Reilly. She reverted to her maiden name after my father died, and these are my family, Gudrun and Anna. They are with my mother in Dublin.
Your father? Who was he? What became of him?
A knot was forming in Kurt's stomach. He could see no logic to the colonel's interest in his family.
Walter Müller. He was shot in 1935 on the night of the Long Knives.
Tell me about the Abwehr deciphering operation, said the colonel.
Kurt told the colonel how the Abwehr routinely deciphered British Naval Cipher 3 messages, and that British Type X signals could be decoded by the Abwehr, but only after receipt of the daily keys from the Spanish legation in London. This information was greeted with a sceptical flicker of the colonel's eyebrows before Kurt added, "The flow of daily keys from Madrid stopped about a year ago. I expect you know what happened there."
The colonel made no response to this.
"Is there anything else you can tell me to prove your story?"
Kurt said, "Contact Professor Hirsch in Dublin. He will vouch for me." Colonel Scott replaced the photographs in his folder and stood up.
"We will be in touch with the authorities in Eire about these people. If they are German citizens, they will probably be interned, or they may be deported."